This week, it was Mobile World Congress, short and sweet, which meant that a lot of Android OEMs announced their devices. I guess the most prominent of them was the Huawei Mate X, which is a little like kind of the follow-up to what we saw last week from Samsung at Unpacked with the Galaxy Fold. And it's the Audi counterpart, I guess, to the any of the Galaxy Fold. What do you think about these? About these names that have cropped up out of this,
it's been when Google first announced that the Android foldables category, they didn't have a name ready for this, and I don't think anybody does yet, and I think they should. But in general, this is the better format, which I think most people agree. I guess the biggest complaint is screen scratching, but I think people's phones are scratched up to they're all scratched up already, so it doesn't really matter that drastically. Maybe I'm forgetting how bad plastic screens of old are, so it could be a much worse issue. But I think going forward, once those hard science materials issues are solved, everybody's foldable should be an Aldi for that.
Yeah, our last podcast, for those that don't know, was this past Friday, and I feel like a lot has changed in terms of what we know about foldables.
Yes.
And what we can even talk about, because, the Galaxy Fold was announced, and we've seen, little bits and pieces of the foldable category before the Galaxy Fold. I mean, I'm thinking like, the ZTE Axon M, which, it's like sort of foldable, but it obviously didn't have a bendable display. So, we've seen this form factor in other ways. And you obviously go back to, cell phones of old, so to speak, which were foldable themselves. Obviously, like the Axon M also didn't have bendable screens. So this bendable screen thing, the Android foldables category, where Google actually had to build a custom version of Android to take advantage of this form factor. This is brand new to us. And even last Friday when we had our, MWC expectations and Samsung Unpacked review show, we didn't know anything because no one got to see the Galaxy Fold at Unpacked, at all, like not even behind like glass. So we didn't really know anything except for what Samsung showed on stage, which, as I mentioned last Friday, felt pretty staged, as things on stage are. And I feel like, though, now with having been able to see other publications actually go hands-on with the Mate X, specifically the Mate X, we still don't know anything about what the Galaxy Fold looks like or feels like, really. And it actually, man, we could talk forever about those terrible, terrible glass cases that the Galaxy Fold was in at MWC. Did you see these photos? They're like, it's like they intentionally put it behind like 10 layers of glass so that it's impossible to tell that there's a crease in the middle of the screen. Like, they're that ashamed of the crease that they just had to build this special case to make it impossible to see. I don't know.
Yeah, they're not. Samsung got a lot more sympathy for not showing it off, for not allowing people to do a hands-on. But then MWC happened, and Huawei was ready to look at it, touch it, have way more transparency with their device, with a better device, mind you, technologically. And what Samsung announced was impressive at the time. But now it's not the best technology. They did a lot technologically, Samsung, to get the Galaxy Fold. But we have this Mate X, which looks thinner, which looks much sleeker, that doesn't have that ridiculous front display with, I don't know, an inch thick bezels atop and below. And they kind of lost the goodwill, the advantage.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's pros and cons to both. I mean, like you were mentioning, the fact that these plastic screens is like kind of starting at square one again with smartphone screens. And we don't know what that looks like. I mean, even the Fold itself, and talking about the Mate X, by the way, the Fold itself, we don't know how that's going to wear over time. We don't know how that crease is going to get worse and worse over time. It seems like they're starting from a place of vulnerability, or like kind of like they're starting with a product that's already very, very, you know, vulnerable to lots of issues. With, like you were saying, like just the actual components and the quality. And so I think that the Mate X has the pros of being kind of like what seems to be a sleeker form factor. And, you know, and also we mentioned how the Galaxy Fold, when it's folded over, kind of leaves that crease or that like space in between, because the display has to fold over and it can't go past a certain radius. And so, you know, it has that gap inside, whereas the Mate X doesn't have that problem. So, you know, I think the Galaxy Fold, to be fair, has some advantages. The other obvious advantage being that main gorgeous display on the inside is not going to get scratched as easily as the one on the Mate X will be. But yeah, that's just my two cents on it. I don't really see, I mean, it sounds like to you, it sounds like your viewpoint is that the Mate X just like lapped the Galaxy Fold, or, you know, just overtook it. And I feel like it didn't really, I feel like they're kind of, they both have trade-offs at this stage. I don't know if one is obviously better than the other to me. I mean, for multiple reasons. One reason being we still don't know a lot about them, but
we're discussing these very theoretically.
For sure.
But yeah, I one more point. From an efficiency standpoint, doesn't it make more sense just to have one display rather than two? That's like my big reason why I prefer the Mate X, even beyond the design. Isn't it better to have one camera that you can flip around back and front for the front facing video calls and main camera rather than having six? That's another reason why I think the Alti display, the Alti form factor is just so much more efficient.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I definitely see the pros to it, and that makes a lot of sense. And I think that the small screen on the Galaxy Fold right now looks really dorky too.
Yeah.
You know, because it, I mean, ideally, and this kind of came up actually today when I was writing about the supposed Motorola foldable that's on its way right around the bend. I think one of the guys from Motorola said something about they're working on a Z form factor where it's like a triple, like a double hinge design to where it kind of like folds in on itself with only one screen, but like only one third of the display is actually exposed, which that's probably a year or two away before we see early versions of that. But that sounds like the best of both worlds, you know, because with the Audi, you have the display is exposed, which is not ideal. With the Innie, you have to have a second display on the outside for quick access to smartphone stuff. So yeah, I agree with you that having the single outer display as of right now seems better, as long as materials wise the Mate X isn't super vulnerable to being destroyed in like a week, which would be a shame for a device that's $2,600.
Yes, it's more expensive. That is, I'm surprised, because Samsung set the bar really high. Be shocked to get sticker shock, and here comes Huawei.
I thought about this today too. Whenever that rumor came out last month, or I guess report from the Wall Street Journal about Moto working on its foldable phone, and this was right after the patent of the Razr looking foldable, the rumored price tag was $1,500. And to me, I thought, wow, that's kind of crazy. But now, now that we've seen the Galaxy Fold and the Mate X, the $1,500 Razr foldable seems like, I don't know, it seems like a really good deal.
Yeah. Do you want to touch on about Moto for a few sec?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much all there is. Basically, I don't know what his name is. One of the product managers, I think, at Motorola. I'm trying to find the story right now, actually. He's the global product, VP of global product at Motorola. And he basically gave an interview with Engadget this week at Mobile World Congress, and said, basically confirmed the Wall Street Journal report saying that, yeah, I mean, they've been working on foldable phones. And actually, I think we mentioned this on the show a few weeks ago. We remember Moto showing off. Were you there that day?
I was not.
Okay, just that's you. Right. It was just me. Well, at what was that called? Lenovo Tech World in 2015, I think. Motorola showed off, or I guess Lenovo showed off some early foldable prototypes, which were pretty terrible. But yeah, we've known that they've been working on foldable stuff for a long time, and they basically confirmed that to Engadget and added that, I guess the juicy bit here is they kind of confirmed that they think that putting the display on the outside is not ideal because of the obvious implications of damaging the soft plastic. So they're on the side, they're on the any, it seems like they're on the any side of the argument. And I guess the juicy part of the story was that their plan is not to be that far, quote unquote, they have no intention of coming later than everyone else to the market, which they are later already because now Samsung and Huawei have both announced their entries. But it seems like the Wall Street Journal report originally said that Motorola's entry was going to come sometime before the end of February, potentially, which that was Wall Street Journal positing, I guess, that Mobile World Congress was a possibility here, which it seems like it might have been. But it looks like, I mean, obviously, Mobile World Congress is over now, and it's going to be over soon, and we didn't see that. So maybe we'll see another summer announcement. Maybe we'll see another Lenovo Tech World or something like that.
They do need a flagship in general. This foldable phone is not going to be this consumer flagship, but they need something inspiring, I think. I guess
the Moto Z has kind of sputtered, it seems like.
Yeah, don't get me started on how they should have just kept iterating on the first generation Moto Z on thinness, because that was something people understood and would have actually wanted, but I digress. Anyways, this Moto foldable, from the patent, it doesn't seem like there's like a flat display, is there? Is there going to be a second display, or are they, even if it's tiny, again, it's just a patent drawing, but I'm curious how they're going to do that.
I don't know how to take this patent at all, because it doesn't look, I don't know, it doesn't look super, I mean, the nice thing about the original Razr, right, was that it folded down seamlessly, and it looked like a really sleek design. Oh, yeah. Based on the current technology, you know, like the limitations of the current technology, it's not going to fold down and look super sleek like a Razr. So this patent, I don't know if what Motorola is working on is actually going to look like this patent, and it wouldn't be surprising if it doesn't, because it's a patent. But it could look something like it. I don't know. They haven't said anything. They didn't say anything today that would suggest that what they're building really is this. But they did very clearly signal that they're going to do any. Which I think will, for this first generation of foldables, I think the innies are going to be the majority.
I agree. Yeah, so I guess moving off from foldables is, I would make the judgment call that Sony had the next most impressive announcement from MWC with the Xperia 1, which is their flagship, and the Xperia 10 and Xperia 10 Plus. So, big feature, 21:9, 4K HDR OLED display. It is a very tall phone with an equally tall bezel just above it. It looks really cool. It's coming from Sony. It's that the skin is mostly sticks to stock Android. It's technologically impressive, design-wise. It's different. It's not a notch. It's not a hole punch. And I really like how it looks, and that Sony's willing to do something quite different. And if physically, it'll definitely stand out to people seeing this phones if it ever makes a major impact in US carriers. But Who knows about that? And the second thing they announced is this Xperia 10 line, which is a mid-range. Again, 21 by 9 display. It's somewhat less powerful, less a Snapdragon. But for the most part, this Sony has an idea of what could do well, and I'm happy that they're running with it.
Yeah. No, I mean, the Xperia 1 looks nice. I mean, like physically, it looks really attractive. And we know the software is going to be relatively, you know, I hate using the word stock Android, but it's going to be, you know, thoughtful. And so, yeah, I mean, the Xperia 1 looks nice. I just have a hard time at this point. I mean, if you just look at the smartphone market in the U.S., it's gotten to the point where there really only are three players, in my opinion, or like three players that matter, and they're Apple, Samsung, and Google. Obviously, Huawei is a really, really, I mean, the Chinese brands are a really big deal in Europe and in China, and elsewhere. But in the US, it's hard for me to even think about these phones. I've kind of gotten to the point, and maybe this is just me, but I've kind of gotten to the point where I'm starting to, this is very different from even 4 years ago. I'm starting to tune out the LG. Like even a year or two ago, I would have thought like, oh, look, get me an LG G6 like review unit. Actually, I did have a G6 review unit. Like, I want to see this phone. Like, it's going to be sold at the AT&T store or whatever. You know, like, it actually matters for the U.S. market. Even if it only, even at that time, was still LG's market share was still obviously a minority. But at this point, it feels like, and it may be just an illusion. It may be just because I'm so engrossed in the Google world now that I just have a hard time. And maybe it's because I'm focusing so much on first party Google now, and that first party Google exists, because it hasn't existed until the last couple of years, really. That I'm starting to like not even pay attention to these announcements. Like, the G8 just felt like, I don't know. I mean. It just felt like, you know, like just not significant, and a lot of really gimmicky features, and just like, you know, just another. It's like LG was like doing wacky stuff for a little while, and then they went back to normal and just said, we need to just focus on, you know, the basics, the ABCD of smartphone. And then now they're going back to doing wacky stuff. And it's like, it just feels like they're scraping around just for some kind of attention or something that matters. Knowing that they're just struggling so much just makes it even that much harder for me to pay attention, I think. And Sony's even worse than that, because Sony's like, you know, they're like, what? They're probably like less than a percentage of the US market. In terms of smartphone install base. So I don't know, like it's cool. Like, yeah, this phone looks nice. The pictures look nice, but does this phone matter? Like how much does this phone really, really matter in the grand scheme of things? And how many people even listening to this podcast, or even listening to the most important or huge podcasts out there, covering Android and Google, are actually going to buy this phone? Not many people, I think. So
yeah, talking about gimmicky and LG. So the LG, the LG.
You talk all day about gimmicky and LG.
The LG G8 ThinQ, which is a very important thing, though I actively try to never include that in posts. Anyways, the gimmicky feature of this phone, well, it has a time of flight sensor, which is what Apple uses for Face ID, and which something that all the Android vendors going forward appears to be using. So to do actual secure face unlock, that's more advanced than like looking at an image and seeing if it matches. Anyways, LG is doing that. They are having security features based on this time of flight front facing sensor, but they are also using it to identify your palm. What is it? Hand ID is what they called it. So they're just blasting IR dots and sensors onto your hand and recognizing the veins, your blood veins, and that as an identification method. But the slightly more ridiculous thing is using that sensor to do gestures, hand-free gestures to control your phone, change the volume move to the next song, etc., etc.
This is the definition of a gimmick. Like, this is the prototype of a smartphone gimmick. This will never, quote me on this, this will never be used by a real person.
No.
Full stop.
I kind of like it.
There are a lot of things, like, you can like it, sure. And it's cool. It's a cool tech demo. But I will go to my deathbed arguing that this will never, ever be used. After you open the phone, you check out this feature maybe once, and, I mean, you have to be insane to use this on a daily basis as a normal interaction method with your phone.
It's not obvious. Like, the LG can throw up a prompt at the beginning of setup telling you about this cool new feature, and the first time you use it, it might be a party trick. But at the end of the day, the buttons are right there. There's a volume up button, volume down button.
Yep, that's a party trick.
You will go to. That being said, it's kind of futuristic.
Yeah, but there are some party tricks that, you know, 20% of people will actually learn to use. Mm-hmm. And they will use after they've practiced it a million times, and it just becomes part of their phone habit. And there are some party tricks that 50% of people, I mean, Siri in the early days was like, I don't know, what 50% of people would actually find a way to actually use Siri, while the other half just literally never used Siri. So in the early days, Siri was a party trick. And this is like, and this is the exception, though. This is like the party trick that you might not even show it at a party. It's almost not even worthy of being called a party trick, because I feel like it's so gimmicky that it will be immediately written off. Not like, oh, that's cool, that's a look at a potential technology future. No, this is a absolutely pointless feature that will go nowhere. This will not have a version 2. This will not be an LG G9. I guarantee it. Nothing like this. There will be no vein hand sensor in the G9.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that's basically it. They also announced the LG V50 ThinQ, which is their 5G phone, and they did this very wild dual screen thing, which I can't wrap my head around personally.
Don't even get me started on that. Well, actually, let's not talk about the dual screen thing yet. Let's talk about the whole V50, the V line.
The V line used to mean something. It used to mean something.
Well, it apparently means something again, and apparently means that the V line is going to be 5G now, and the G line is going to be not 5G. Which, that makes no sense at all, because the cellular network, or the 5G as a standard is coming. It's going to replace 4G LTE within, you know, a few years. So you can't have one model that is 5G and one flagship that is 5G and one flagship that's not 5G, because it will be a defining feature of a flagship just to have the baseline of having the latest, you know, cellular technology. You know, like, that will just be what flagships are. So you can't, I mean, unless they plan to make the G line not a flagship, which it may be the plan. Maybe they're going to make the G line mid-range and the V line will be the true premium now, and the mid-range will just have LTE. I don't know. But it just doesn't make any sense to me, if at least based on their current lineup. But yeah, that's this screen accessory. What do you think about that? What do you think, this has any merit at all?
No, absolutely not. They just tried to get into the trend. Everybody else around them was announcing, so they had something. It looks like a hackathon project, honestly.
Yeah, it looks like, I mean, that's basically what the Moto Mods projects kind of were. This feels like if LG did a Moto Mods competition.
And they had their own Moto Mods, mind you.
They did. They had real Moto Mods at one point for about 12 months or less. I wonder how quickly, that's something I think about, like, how quickly after the launch of the G6 did they decide, no, we're not doing this again?
Was it like, was it the G6? G5,
or the G5. No, the G5. You're right. It's the G5. How long after the G5 did it, like, was it like a month? Like 30 days after the launch of the G5? And they're like, we're not doing this again for the G6. Like, you know, you have a fork in the road. It's like the G6 is either going to be modular or it's not. This is either going to be something that catches or it doesn't. And I always wonder, like, was it 6 months? I mean, it had to have been less than 6 months, because you have to finish the G6. And the G6 had nothing at all. Like, it was completely abandoned. There was no modular features on the G6 at all. So it had to have been soon. It had to have been, like, It's bizarre to think about that. Like, before the first G5 phones were probably shipping to consumers, they probably had already decided that they were abandoning the modular idea. Which is hilarious to me, because, you know, with the G5 launch, they also announced, like, all these, like, third-party programs, like, trying to get developers to build mods for it, and, you know, it's like... Yeah, it's just funny. You know, they obviously were co-developing. They're definitely, there's probably some prototype internally of some G6 somewhere that actually has, you know, that same modular system that the G5 had, but it just got buried.
Yeah.
Anyways, I digress. I think the dual screen thing with the what are we on? I keep forgetting. G8. V50, yes.
Yeah.
Is cool as a gadget. That's how I feel like a lot of things this year, man. Like, everything's cool as gadgets, but do they matter? No, right now they don't. None of them do. Foldable phones don't matter right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems like I've gone from cautiously pessimistic to cautiously optimistic, I think, in the last week on foldables.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to say, I've gone from here's neutral. I've gone from slightly below neutral to slightly above neutral. Like that's where that's how my attitude on foldables has changed.
That's a plus. That's a optimistic plus.
Yeah, Steven being optimistic. That's always a good thing, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, this week just feels like a bunch of just cool gadgets, which I see a lot of people praising. Are you pro cool gadgets that don't matter, or are you anti cool gadgets that don't matter?
I'm absolutely pro. Like, for my I'm two minds. My own personal amusement, sure, make everything and stick to the wall. But like, I have this other thread in me, like, should you really be wasting that much money? You could do other stuff. You could invest in hard sciences and make cool R&D stuff that might pan out 10 years once everything is better. But so yeah, I'm of two minds.
I guess. Yeah, I mean, we could put all these companies in different categories. I mean, I don't think Google's going to do anything foldable for the next 24 months. It doesn't seem like that's going to be a likelihood to me.
Not to say that they don't have something in the labs.
Sure. They definitely have something in the labs. Just as Apple definitely has something in the labs. But like, you know, there's two categories. There's, as you were saying, I forgot what the phrase was used last week, but the sucker, there's the category of like the tech companies who come out and do this. And it's like right now it's Samsung and Huawei. And it always is. It's always the bottom of the barrel Android OEMs that do the crazy stuff first, because they're the ones that are struggling. And not to say that Samsung's the bottom of the barrel or Huawei's the bottom of the barrel, but I'm just saying, generally speaking, you know, we've seen the Motorola's do the Moto mods, and we've seen LG do the, you know, modular stuff. It's like the companies that are struggling the most are the companies that are the most anxious to get out with something that actually catches people's attention, because they
5G.
Oh yeah, 5G is another perfect example. And you know, Apple may or may not do 5G this year. What's the latest rumor on that?
2020.
So yeah, they're not doing 5G this year. They're not doing 5G until late next year. And so, these companies are the first out to do these crazy experiments. And they're in one category. And the other category is these companies that don't need to. You know, Apple doesn't need to. They don't need to be the first out with a 5G phone. Their iPhone 11 is not going to sell any worse this year because it doesn't have 5G. I don't think. I don't think that will move the mark or move the mark on iPhone 11 sales at all. Same with Google. I don't think that the Google Pixel 4. It's crazy that we're already talking about the Google Pixel 4, but I don't think Google needs to do any of these crazy experiments. They can just put millions and millions of dollars in their marketing muscle and advertise 3 times on the Super Bowl and, you know, do this Oscars ad that they did. Was it Grammys? I can never keep it. Was it Grammys or the Oscar? Both? Yeah, they do ads for all these. But my bigger point is Google doesn't need to do this. And I don't think they will do it. And I tend to, just personally, I like the companies that don't do these early experiments that don't matter, because I much prefer the first version of that technology that I own, personally, just speaking as a technology consumer. Like, I prefer that version, that first version of something that I own, to be the version that has already learned from Samsung doing stupid stuff for like 2 years. if that makes sense. So I'm excited to see what Google's foldable looks like in 2021, and that's when I will probably start to say positive things about foldables. But until then, I'm not really, like, I don't know, but maybe this is me, but the techie guy in me doesn't get that excited by these early experiments. And I know that I'm a minority, but that's just how I feel.
Yeah.
And I know that you're probably like, you're like the opposite in that way, aren't you?
It depends. It depends on the context. But I guess to wrap, oh, I had this good transition when you were talking about gimmicks. So I was going to say, can I interest you in 5 cameras on the phone?
The Nokia 9 PureView.
Yes, the storied PureView brand. And they had that 42 megapixel thing. It wasn't even running Android. What was it running? Migo? What's that thing called? Migo?
I can't remember.
It might even be S60 anyways. So, cameras. Nokia had a long... Well, I wouldn't say long running, but they had a tradition doing good camera stuff in mobile cameras before everybody else got good at it. And I guess the clear trend line with Nokia is that they're just pushing the technology really hard. 42 megapixels on the phone. Not 5 cameras on the phone. And I guess from the most... It looks cool. It physically looks cool to have it laid out in a hexagonal pattern. And the early reviews somewhat say that it's still a slow experience, but of course it's not. The early hands-on say the processing is somewhat slow, and I'm sure it'll get tuned down. But is this really the right camera approach? Just stick on more hardware to capture more light? Of course it doesn't hurt, but I guess what app Google's doing has clearly shown that that algorithms, technology can go a long way.
Yeah. Why stop at 5? Let's just do like 20 and see what that could do with AI in the mix. I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, that was Nokia's flagship, so to speak. But in terms of this MWC discussion, I would have honestly put Nokia in front of talking about LG in terms of a company that's doing more interesting things. So the most interesting part about Nokia is their Android One, how they're strict observers of that. And they had these Nokia 3.2, Nokia 4.2 phones, which are just one of the mill Android ones with an interesting assistant button, which we'll talk more about after this. But Nokia is an example of somebody doing something interesting in the Android space.
Yeah, too bad they have. Too bad they're in that like 10% of the market that's just other.
Yeah, and what know, happens like, when Google enters the mid range? Is the big question.
Yeah, we don't know, and we don't know when that's happening either. Or I mean, I feel like if it was happening, I don't know. David's report said this spring, and it's just like
we're about to enter spring.
Yeah, we're about to enter spring, but I feel like we would know more by now if it
yeah.
was. It seemed like, I don't know. I mean, I know we've seen them leak, and I know they're not flagships, so they don't have that attention that the mainline has. But it feels like it's been quiet for something that's potentially launching in a few or a month or two.
Yeah.
If we're using spring, and if it's going to be a US launch on Verizon, which is a pretty big deal.
It is.
It just seems pretty quiet to me, especially since they're Pixels, and Pixels seem to be like the hype machine of the tech internet.
Yeah.
The tech news cycle. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the market share of all these companies like gets shifted around when Google enters the sub 500 realm, because that's what's key. I mean, Motorola's at like 6%, I think, right now, and that's all sub $500 almost entirely. So anyways, I guess that's kind of a little bit of a good transition, because this week we did see the Pixel 3 Lite and the Pixel 3 XL Lite pass through the FCC.
Yes.
We think.
So we saw 8 in total. We saw 8 FCC filings that came in throughout Monday. It was a bit of a rush. In terms of how many, and they kept coming out like every hour or so. So that was a lot of firing to go through. We don't know too much about it. It just confirms the model number leak that we saw late last month. So that's a thing. It's running Android 9, which is like the one solid piece of information we got from these documents. It has the necessary bans for Verizon, looks like it. But yeah, it's just very vague FCC filings, at least 8 variants. Not all for the US, obviously. But yeah, it was very interesting to see them come in. And the most substantial thing from this is that we got from this FTC filings that it's coming soon. It, months.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I guess that actually kind of contradicts what I was just saying, was that it seems like it's been quiet, but at the same time, we're seeing this FCC filing come out, and, you know, that usually is a little bit of a signal for when, for the timing of the release, and I think last year, you know, the Pixel 3 and Pixel 3 XL were, what, like 2 months before? So, you know, that would align with the rumors, so... anyways, Google also had a little bit of a presence at Mobile World Congress, even though that presence was not in any way related to the Pixel 3 Lite, which I guess is not surprising at all. I guess the most important thing, the most important announcement, and maybe you agree with me, is that the Google Assistant is coming to Messages.
Yes.
And it's very, very similar to what we already saw in Allo. So,
yeah.
What do you think about that?
So, when Google first announced that RCS is the next major consumer push, they did hint that Assistant would be something that's coming to Messages. We really need to work out how to call it. It's no longer Android Messages. I've been going by Messages for Android, which is technically correct. But yeah, so when you're in a conversation with somebody, Google will suggest suggestions at the bottom of the screen. You can tap on one to open a Google Assistant panel that has all the information about a movie or a restaurant, and you can easily share it back into the conversation. Google shared a GIF. This is, according to them, the timeline is months for all English users around the world. Just seems like quite a while. But yeah, it looks really cool. It looks like a snappy interaction. And technologically, the biggest advantage of this is Google's leveraging on-device machine learning. So when Google looks, the suggestions that Google provides on what you should search are completely done on-device. And the only time Google knows what you're talking about is when you initiate that search for the Google Assistant card, for that knowledge graph card. So it's good on the privacy front. It looks very snappy. It sounds useful. And with Allo's death imminent, it's good that they finally added this.
Yeah, I guess with everything that Google does, there's always the privacy question, privacy implications. And to me, it reads like, do we know whether or not this is going to be something that you can turn off if you want to? Because otherwise, it seems like reading.
You can turn off Smart Reply, so I'm sure you'll be able to turn this off as well. The suggestion pills.
Well, that would be good for many people who are suddenly concerned that Google will be reading every single one of their RCS chat messages.
Yes. So.
Which. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. What's up? Messages, that was their flagship announcement. They have another slew of minor ones. Google Assistant, Google Maps for Android and iOS is expanding beyond English in the coming weeks and months. That's a good push. And then there's a lot of international expansion that Google's doing. They're adding 6 more languages to Google Home's bilingual mode, which allows you to talk in 2 languages and get replies that are contextually relevant. Google's expanding multiple actions to French and German, more Indian languages, the ability to check in, to have assistant check into your flight, which is announced at CES, is coming to some European and Australian airlines. But the other big addition is this Google Assistant button, which LG had it last year on the G7 and V35. Mm-hmm. But Google seems to be really pushing this. And personally, this took me by surprise. It's going to be on the Nokia, the 3.2 and 4.2. It's going to be on Xiaomi's flagships. It's, of course, on LG's new phones. Google also named TCL. So this is going to be a really big push, which I didn't really expect. I'm not sure about you, but we, of course, had on the Pixel 3 with Active Edge. But this idea, Google's really pushing to make it so much more easier to launch Assistant and to use Assistant. And I didn't see this coming.
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't see it coming, but I don't see most things coming sometimes. I don't know. I really appreciate Active Edge, and I think it works really, really well in the Pixel. And I presume that that is probably intellectual property that Google picked up via HTC.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's probably just, you know, it's probably technology that a lot of these other makers might have thought about doing, but they might be restricted from doing it for that reason. In which case, doing a button is the obvious alternative.
And easier, probably. Much easier.
Yeah, yeah, it's less complicated for the end user, I think. And honestly, I would prefer, I'm not sure. I really like Active Edge, but if Google said you can have a button or you can have Active Edge, I would probably say bring on the button.
Yeah, same. Nokia is doing something really cool with it, but it doubles as a notification light. So there's like a ring of lighting around the button, and it flashes when you have notifications. I think that's really clever compared to even an always on display or a dedicated notification light. So there is meaningful innovation.
Yeah, I mean, I think the timing of this makes sense too, because I mean, yeah, like LG and Google tend to have this buddy-buddy relationship.
It's just
LG
interesting.
Does things like a little bit earlier than everyone. And I think that goes back many, many years. You know, we can think about, you know, the Nexus 5 and all the other like things that Google and LG, I mean, LG Watch Style and LG Watch Sport were another special made with our friends at Google, which seemed like made with our friends at Google was going to be codename for like a new kind of category of hardware partnerships. But then we haven't really seen that branding. That branding kind of fizzled out, it seems like.
Yeah.
For whatever reason. But yeah, I think the timing of this makes sense because what I was trying to say was that Assistant has had a lot of time to mature. In the last couple of years, and the version of Assistant that is now a button away, right? Like making the commitment of making this feature attached to a physical button on the OEM's part is a big commitment. And the OEM seeing how widespread and how well used the Assistant is in general across all categories was probably a factor in that like the OEMs agreeing to do this. And also just Assistant has obviously, I mean, it seems like every other week there's new Assistant features, minor or major. So it's, you know, like it's as a platform, it's been built out a lot over the last couple of years. And so it would make sense that now OEMs are starting to see that, oh, like this is actually, this makes our product better.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they've had Assistant for a long time, but you know, the commitment has been only in software. Committing to a dedicated hardware button is a whole other level.
Yeah, and also
good to see.
It also means that they can have worse microphones. They don't have to have always on microphones if you have a button right there. So that's
true.
Somewhat easier.
So yeah, that's pretty much. I mean, there were a few other minor things from Google at Mobile World Congress. The Android One logo, interestingly, this is actually a little interesting tidbit that I had a little bit of a thought about. The Android One logo got redesigned, which it previously said Android One, and the One was underlined with Google's four colors.
Yes.
And now it is a all green. It's the
pill. It's a pill, kind of.
It looks like the standard Android brand with one added to it, which is it's just interesting to me seeing the Google remove those four colors, because in the years since that original Android One logo was announced or debuted, those four colors have gone on to mean something completely new.
Yeah.
Those four colors signify first-party Google services and products now.
Hmm.
And I mean, it goes back to. I mean, think about like the Pixel light strip on, you know, old Pixel devices. You know, like these four colors. I mean, obviously, Google's logo has these four colors, so it goes back to literally like year two of Google, but. You know, lately, these four colors have meant first-party Google apps. They mean, you know, first-party, it means, you know, everything Google. That's just Google. And Android, as we've seen, and I wrote about this last fall, is that Android brand is kind of, if not dying, it's being clearly siloed. It's being put in this separate category where it's like Google markets itself as Google using these very bright whites and these four colors used in different ways in logos and marketing and images and websites. And material theme is part of that too. And then Android is on this, it's like put in a separate category and it's still marketed. I mean, Google at Mobile World Congress this year did the, you know, they did the pin giveaways and, you know, the Android robots are still, you know, on display for you to take your selfie with. And so Android as a brand doesn't seem to be gone, but Google's making this clear distinction between what's Google and what's Android. And to me, that's the bigger picture behind what seems to be a minor logo revamp. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of how you
looked at it? Yeah, Android One, it's still a thing. It's still a Google noted, 250% year-over-year growth with increased adoption from Nokia, LG, and I think Xiaomi partners. It is a thing. It is a profitable thing for them. And in the long run, it's better that Android have this better experience. But at the same time, it may not be the priority for Google as it once was.
Yeah, I think at one point it was kind of Google saying, like, we want to get, like, it seems like the goal at one point was we want to get OEMs to build Google Experience phones, right? Like, that yeah. seems like what it was early, and it has morphed into we're getting OEMs to build Android phones that follow more rigorous requirements that make them a better experience.
Yeah, and that's...
Which, it's a subtle difference,
yes.
right?
But
the new logo represents that, I think.
Those new requirements are an important difference, but at the same time, I think where Google sees it can make a meaningful difference is on the services, making sure everything has assistant, everything has these assistant buttons, everything works with Google Assistant. Mm. I think it also reflects how... Oh, darn, I lost my train of thought.
Yeah, you're fine. I completely agree. And I think that what they're doing now is that if you really want that Google experience, they're now selling that as a complete package. And that Google experience is buying a Pixel, buying a Google Home, buying a, you know, Google Home Hub, buying a Google Pixel Book. Like, Google sells an entire suite of pure, this is the Google experience phone. And it just seems like they're not interested anymore
yeah.
in delegating that to third parties,
and that,
which is good for them.
That pure Google experience, like in the early days of Android One, Google wanted to enforce to express itself by dictating what Android feels like. But like the real message of that was we want Samsung to conform more to everybody else. I would speculate that the real big push of that was getting Samsung to be tone down TouchWiz and do these crazy ideas and be more in line with everybody else. But at this point going forward, I think Google realizes that their efforts are better spent enforcing a consistent assistant experience all across its devices.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, we can think about the old Android Silver rumors. Things have changed.
They have indeed.
Things have changed a lot. Android Silver is gone, and it has been replaced by a wholehearted, full-fledged hardware effort, hardware and software ecosystem effort, which I'm over the moon about. It's awesome. And I mean, as someone who now obviously owns Pixels and has all the Google ecosystem in my home, it's like, it really is starting to feel like, and more with every Google Fall hardware event, more and more feels like an alternative to that complete Apple ecosystem experience that, you know, was at one point and still kind of is unchallenged.
Mm.
It's starting to feel like that, and it's really cool. Meanwhile, they're still continuing to support Android phones and all of their partners and makers, which we definitely saw this week, which is great. Anyways, I guess we can round out the show talking a little about what's coming down the line with Android. Android Q obviously is on the way. We actually saw in the Android open source project this week, actually, I think that we saw confirmed for the first time that Q is 10.0.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not surprising at all because Google has been on a 1.0 per year pattern for the last 5 years or so.
Yeah.
But Android Q is 10.0, and we've seen little tidbits, bits and pieces. It seems like XDA managed to get their hands on an early build. We've talked about this on the show in previous weeks. And so they've kind of shown off some early features. Last week, we got, I mean, we I don't know, there have just been a few things that we've seen, that are little tidbits that have kind of cropped up over the last week or so. One of which being Google testing Android Q navigation gestures that replace that little triangle back button.
Yeah.
You know, like last year was kind of like a half and half. You know, they were kind of like moving into the gesture nav, but they kind of left some of the ancient Google UX or Android UX functionality. And it seems like they might move away from that this year and go all in on gestures.
Yeah.
Saw that via XDA. And then this week, Kyle discovered that some Android Q APIs, which he originally discovered, I think, if I remember correctly, apologies if I'm wrong, but Android Q APIs that seemingly were built to bring RCS for, you know, like basically allow third party apps to use RCS, has apparently been delayed. So that was something that we thought, you know, was like surefire evidence was coming with Android Q, but it looks like, according to some more commits that he spotted this past week, have been pushed back from Android Q. There's also digital well-being integration, which is coming to Android Q devices in Chrome.
Yeah.
The Chrome browser, which... we don't really, it functionality wise, it's pretty light right now.
Yeah.
Basically lets you time out on websites, kind of like you can with apps.
Yeah. Digital well-being. There's a really big push for technology industry. And then lately we're getting these studies that show that screen time doesn't really affect behavior that much. So I think it's how we deal with modern technology is an important effort, but it might seem that the priority on that is getting lower going to the future.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that the jury is still out on that one.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of these features were... Honestly, I think a lot of these features were probably prompted less by studies or clinical trials proving some detrimental effects and more by people just feeling it.
Yeah.
People just feeling attached or feeling dependent on, like, kind of like feeling dependent on their phones like a drug. You know, it's like, I think a lot of people just realized how that just doesn't feel good to them personally. And so I think these features were kind of built, one, kind of in the long term as a hedge against potential issues that may come up later. it's good to have this groundwork laid if some real issues do come up later. At least that's kind of how I see, how I view it. But also I just think a lot of people wanted this stuff. I do. I use it across all my devices. It would be nice, like I said last year, it would be nice if all of it was unified experience across everything, but I like it. I want it. But yeah, that's all the Android Q stuff that we've seen in the last couple of weeks. One little thing we can talk about, and I'm probably going to write a story about this maybe, and I'll just talk about one little tidbit of things that I know, just as a, I'll just give you a cookie for those that are listening to the podcast. Apparently, Google is actively testing a feature, and I'll write a whole story about this, so I hope this doesn't get reblogged without the full context around it, but apparently Google is working on a feature that is basically a theming platform for Android, which... I don't know if it's actually coming with Android Q, but this is a feature that really exists. It really is running on internal devices. It's a real thing. that Google's working on, and it basically lets you theme every aspect of the operating system. As far as I heard, you could do things like change the color of the notification window, or like the notification drop down. You could change the colors of like the volume toggle, like pop up that appears on the Pixel. It seems like this was built specifically for Pixel devices, because I think it's kind of the theming system is built in dependent on the way Google has built Material Theme into the Google, the Google experience. Is that what it's called? The Google experience?
It's no name.
we got to give it a name if it doesn't have a name. Anyway, we don't have any way to refer to this other than calling it stock Android, which is just not accurate at all.
Pixel experience.
So yeah, that's just something that we know is in the works. Don't want to really share anything more than that as of right now, but you know, Android Q is looking interesting, and dark mode system wide is going to be a thing. Seems like that's like a surefire happening. What's up?
And that's like the first step, really, to more things.
Oh, yeah.
They have to lay the groundwork first.
So, yeah, that's your little cookie for the week. I'll have more details on that and some other things, some other little tidbits I've heard about what's coming with Android Q. Actually, we're probably only a couple weeks away from the first developer preview, so that won't have a lot of these kind of user-facing pixely things that we usually see later in the fall, but... it will give us our first, or I guess our second, since XDA leaked that build already, our second look at Android Q and what it looks like in its earliest form. So stay tuned for that. Anything else, really? I mean, Google Duo for Web rolled out this week, which is a pretty big deal, confirming our report from last month, almost exactly a month later, like 30 days exactly. Google Fi expanded its deal with Sprint to my phone keeps blowing up every time I say Google. It's apparently going to offer, Google Fi is going to offer 5G via Sprint, which is an interesting little tidbit that came out of Mobile World Congress this week. Doesn't really mean anything right now.
Nope.
Neither does anything with 5G related to it. And there are a whole slew of app updates. You want to give us the scale on that?
So we saw the Google Material Theme for Gmail on iOS. We saw the Google Voice on the web get the Google Material Theme tweaks as well. And we saw it on Google Doc Sheets and Slide homepages on the web just last night. So my personal favorite app update, it's not really Google, it's from Slack. Fixing their purple app icon with a white background that, yes, might be boring because every other app adopts a white background these days, but it was so much better than the purple one in terms of visibility.
It looks, I mean, have you seen the new icon compared to the Google Photos icon?
It's right next to each other for me.
They're identical. Like, you just rotate the Google Photos icon 90 degrees. And you have the Slack icon. Now that it's white, at least. When it was purple, at least it had that. But now it's white background, and it looks exactly like Google Photos.
And honestly, like the Google Photos icon, the colors are darker. But when Google updates that icon, it's definitely going to be lighter shades. And it's going to look like that.
Probably. Yeah, that's right. The Google Photos icon has been around a long time. Yeah. It's in need of an update. Forgot about that.
A bit more rounded. I said colors lighter. Less sharp. Anyways, it'll be the same icon.
All these icons that Google's doing, I think about like the Google Fi one, the new Google Fi one. It just looks like they opened up like Photoshop and they made like, I don't know, like a 10 pixel perfect diameter, and then they chose four colors and just drew lines. You know how you know how in Photoshop you can like hold shift and you can just click and then click another spot and it'll make like a perfect little cylinder? It's like they did that with every icon. The Google One icon, just four colors, and it's like, I mean, they're nice, but man, they look lazy to me.
Yeah, they do. They kind of do.
All right, well, I think that's pretty much it for the week. Actually, I mean, it's only been like 4 days since we had our last show, so I'm actually surprised we got through this show having as much to talk about as we did, because
Sunday was a bunch.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess we'll see you again next week. On Wednesday afternoon. You can tune into Alphabet's Coop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday and publish every Thursday morning on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as Google Podcasts, Google Play, Pocket Casts, iTunes, and Apple Podcasts. And you can also listen directly over at 95google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always, and thanks to Admiral for joining me, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.